Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tado jayam udirai bhaktir bhavati naishtiki om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 4th Chapter, Texts 1 and 2. That's my understanding. So text 1 doesn't have a purport, so we will recite text 2. Shri Brahma Uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yanvrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varan yadyapi durlabhan Shri Brahma Uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yan vrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varan yadyapi durlabhan Shri Brahma uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yan vrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varan yadyapi durlabhan Shri Brahma uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yanvrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varam yadyapi durlabhan Shri Brahma uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yanvrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Shri Brahma uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yanvrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varan yadyapi durlabhan One more Shri Brahma uvacha Tate me durlabha pumsham Yanvrinishe varan mama Tathapi vitarami anga Varan yadyapi durlabham Shri Brahma uvacha Lord Brahma said Tata O dear son Ime, all these, Durlabha, very rarely obtained, Pumsham, by men, Yan, those which, Vrinishe, you ask, Varan, benedictions, Mama, from me, Tathapi, still, Vitarami, I shall deliver. Anga, O Hiranyakashipu, Varan, the benedictions, Yadyapi, although, Durlabhan, not generally available. translation. Lord Brahma said, O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available. Purport. Material benedictions are not always exactly worthy of being called benedictions. Interesting purport. If one possesses more and more, a benediction itself may become a curse. For just as achieving material opulence in this material world requires great strength and endeavor, maintaining it also requires great endeavor. Lord Brahma informed Hiranyakashipu that although he was ready to offer him whatever he had asked, the result of the benedictions would be very difficult for Hiranyakashipu to maintain. Nonetheless, since Brahma had promised, he wanted to grant all the benedictions asked. The word Durlabhan indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sopadantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripadamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. The chapter is titled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. So since this is the first two verses, we will also read the summary of the chapter and then we'll comment a little bit on that. So this is the chapter summary. This chapter fully describes how Hiranyakashipu obtained power from Lord Brahma and misused it by harassing all the living entities within this universe. So the previous chapter describes the austerities that Hiranyakashipu performed. And then at the end of the chapter, Lord Brahma, he has come, and Hiranyakashipu, he is beseeching Lord Brahma his wish list. And it's a long wish list. Essentially, he asked for immortality, which Lord Brahma cannot give. But then Hiranyakashipu thinks that in disguise I will ask for immortality. So he asks for various conditions in which he should not be killed, and he thinks he has gained immortality. So that's the previous chapter. By severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu satisfied Lord Brahma and obtained the benedictions he desired. After he received these benedictions, his body, which had been almost entirely consumed, was revived with full beauty and a luster like gold. So here, Srila Prabhupada is writing that by severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu satisfied Lord Brahma and obtained the benedictions he desired. So in this world, we see that to become powerful or to become accomplished in anything, one requires to perform some austerities. Whether these amazing athletes that you see, so behind their success, there are years and years and years of austerity that they perform. Similarly, the artists, many of the artists that are very, very accomplished, musicians, there are some, I remember some classical, Indian classical, instrumental personalities. They were sharing about their childhood, that their sadhana practice, would be almost like 13, 14 hours a day. You know, so while all the other children were busy, you know, engaging in, you know, frivolous, playful activities, some of these artists that were very gifted, and also it was also in their, you know, lineage, you know, like these amazing tabla players, like a parampara, they have their own parampara. So some of these artists, they would practice, there would be their sadhana 14, 16 hours every day. So practically, they were single-minded and focused on that. So athletes, artists, students, you know, those that, you know, we, most of us, we get an education so that, you know, we can get some artha, and then from the artha, we can get some karma, that. So to get that, you know, bachelor's or master's or, you know, PhD degree, as there are years and years of austerity behind that. So this is, you know, materially speaking also, we can see that. So to become accomplished or powerful in anything, one requires to perform austerities. So Hiranyakashipu, he has performed these amazing austerities, which, as the Srimad Bhagavatam describes, I mean, one cannot even imagine, one cannot, never were such austerities performed before, like standing on the, you know, toes of one's legs for 1,000 years. You can't do it. We can't even do it for 5 minutes. So anyway, so Hiranyakashipu, he performed all these austerities, but for what? So that also connects to the purport that we read today. Nonetheless, he continued to be envious of Lord Vishnu. That's the problem. He unable to forget Lord Vishnu's having killed his brother. Hiranyakashipu conquered everyone in the 10 directions. And the 3 worlds, and brought all living entities, both demigods and asuras, under his control. So this chapter is titled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. So he has this power, and as they say, power corrupts, and absolute power absolutely corrupts. Not that he has absolute power, but for all practical purposes, within this material world, I mean, he has absolute power. Prabhupada also writes here, but for the 3 demigods, we'll continue to read. Becoming the master of all places, including the residence of Indra, whom he had driven out, he began enjoying life in great luxury and thus became mad. All the demigods, but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, came under his control and began serving him. It's sort of maybe bewildering here. Prabhupada, one of the offenses against the holy name is to not consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Vishnu, Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the names of Lord Vishnu. Here, Srila Prabhupada, all the demigods but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva came under his control and began serving him. So we should understand this carefully, properly. This is achintya bheda abheda tattva, in one sense. By that, one can reconcile, you know, this apparent contradiction. As Srimad Bhagavatam also mentions, you know, Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the fountainhead. Ete cha amsha kalapamsho. There are his expansions and plenary expansions, and, you know, the portions of his plenary expansions. Of course, these are all, most of the Vishnu Tattva is in its own category. But when we look at it from that perspective, one can make sense of this. So, it's a functional, if you will, it's a functional distinction. Like, for example, Lord Krishna, he doesn't have anything to do with the material aspect, material creation. But one of his expansions, Lord Vishnu, he gets involved, you know, with the aspects of material creation. So in that way, one can reconcile, if any of us, you know, caught that. But that's how we can reconcile. So all the demigods, but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva came under his control and began serving him. So practically everybody. But despite all his material power, he was dissatisfied because he was always puffed up, proud of transgressing the Vedic regulations. All the brahmanas were dissatisfied with him and they cursed him with determination. Eventually, all the living entities, within the universe, represented by the demigods and sages, prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakashipu's rule. So Hiranyakashipu is terrorizing the universe and all the demigods, including all the demigods, and they have actually abandoned their place of residence. And as it happens, the demigods, whenever they are in, you know, deep distress, they approach Lord Vishnu. So they go to Lord Vishnu, ask for help. Then Lord Vishnu informed the demigods that they and the other living entities would be saved from the fearful conditions created by Hiranyakashipu. So Lord Vishnu assured them. Since Hiranyakashipu was the oppressor of all the demigods, the follower of the Vedas, the cows, the brahmanas, and the religious saintly persons, and since he was envious of the Supreme Lord, he would naturally be killed very soon. Hiranyakashipu's last exploit would be to torment his own son, Prahlad. So as you can see here, from the time the demigods were oppressed, and then they offered prayers to Lord Vishnu, and then Lord Vishnu actually came as Lord Narasimhadev, it took some time. So sometimes when we propitiate unto the Supreme Lord, you know, it may not be done right away. But of course, here Prabhupada writes, very soon the Supreme Lord came. But we also understand how Hiranyakashipu was born, and then he was, tortured, all that. So he was already above 5, 6, 7 years. So all this went on for a long time. Of course, from the demigod's perspective, perhaps it was not so much of a time. But anyway, so this is another thing to learn. Hiranyakashipu's last exploit would be to torment his own son Prahlad, who was a Mahabhagavata, an exalted Vaishnava. Then his life would end. When the demigods were thus reassured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone was satisfied, knowing that the miseries inflicted upon them by Hiranyakashipu would come to an end. So the demigods were assured by the Supreme Lord, and they waited. Finally, Narada Muni describes the characteristics of Prahlad Maharaj, the son of Hiranyakashipu, and describes how his father envied his own son. In this way, the chapter ends. So, text 1, the translation, we'll read. Narada Muni continued, so he's continuing from the previous chapter. Narada Muni is speaking to this Yudhishthira Maharaj, so he's continuing. Narada Muni continued, Lord Brahma was very much satisfied by Hiranyakashipu's austerities, which were difficult to perform. Therefore, when solicited for benedictions, he indeed granted them, although they were rarely to be achieved. And the same is mentioned even in the second verse. Lord Brahma said, O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available. So I understand that there are some new persons in the audience. Maybe we are all new, I understand there are some new persons in the audience. One of the verses that is there in the scriptures is mentioned, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashanta. So it means that the devotee of the Supreme Lord, he is peaceful. But one who is not a devotee, he has three aspirations mainly. Bhukti, that means he wants some material enjoyment, Mukti, liberation, or Siddhi, mystic powers, And if you read Hiranyakashipu's wish list, he wanted he also wanted mystic perfections. But then, as we see in Hiranyakashipu's case, no matter how much he had practically everything. The whole universe the three worlds were under his control. But then he was not peaceful, he was not satisfied. And his son later on even comments that because you have not controlled your senses, you are not able to be peaceful. And every living entity in its natural condition is actually looking for a connection with the Supreme Lord. He's looking for happiness, we hear. He's looking for happiness. But that happiness, the realm that he's looking for happiness, is not in the happiness that one feels when the senses, they come in contact with the sense objects, the happiness that is experienced in that way. But the happiness that the living entity is looking for is on the platform of the soul. So that is why no matter whatever one gets in the material realm, one is not peaceful. Prabhupada told a story once. There was this, Bengali, very wealthy, Bengali man. He was very, very wealthy. And then so one day, he was sitting outside with his wife. And he looked very, very sad. One would think, well, he has, practically everything. Why would he be sad? What would he want? He has money, so he can have everything. But even then, he was feeling sad. So his wife, she asked him, what is the matter? And then, at the same time, there was a, beggar that was, walking by, and he was begging. And this wealthy man, he said, I want to be like him. So here Prabhupada is writing that material benedictions, they eventually they turn into a curse or a burden. So here this is, wealthy man, he practically had everything, but then he was not peaceful from within. So the living entity, its natural condition is to be in a relationship with God. But somehow or the other, the conditioned living entity, he has forgotten that relationship with God, and so he looks for that happiness in every other place. But somehow or the other, the conditioned living entity, he comes in contact, with the devotees of the Lord, the saintly persons, with the scriptures, then once, dormant attraction for the Supreme Lord, it begins to awaken. So we just came back from a retreat. The topic of the retreat was the role of faith in the unfolding of devotion. So this Adav Shraddha, this preliminary faith, in a way is there, because faith is intrinsic to the soul. It's there in all living entities. It cannot be separated. So this preliminary faith is there. But that preliminary faith, depending on the degree of covering of the lust, that means I am at the center, Krishna is not at the center, depending on the degree of the covering, that preliminary faith is quenched. Like Krishna mentions, Prabhupada writes in the purport of 17th chapter, Divisions of Faith. He explains, that faith is intrinsic to the soul, but then depending on the modes of material nature, one's heart is in. If one's heart is in the mode of goodness, then one has a particular faith. If one's heart is in the mode of passion, then one has a particular faith. If one's heart is in the mode of ignorance, one has a particular kind of faith. And our acharyas, they comment. I also used to wonder what is, like the heart. So essentially our acharyas, they comment that this heart is a sum total of the, the subtle platform that we're talking about. Not just the heart, the mind, the intelligence, the chitta, so all that, So depending on what modes of material nature, we are, that will influence our faith. So, but faith is intrinsic to the soul. So somehow or the other, yadrichaya, when one comes in contact, with devotees of the Lord, then that, faith, intrinsic faith, in worshipping the Supreme Lord, that becomes awakened. It's called Adav Shraddha, by the association of devotees. And then, in the association of devotees, what happens is, one begins to do what the devotees do. So initially, it's like almost like imitation. Like a small child, when he sees his parents, you know, performing some activities of devotion, he also wants to imitate them. So similarly, you know, we also want to imitate the devotees, and we take up some devotional activities, chanting, hearing, serving Vaishnavas, that. And so the dormant attraction that is there, you know, the faith that is dormant, that is awakened, that. And then our teachers explain that one's journey in Krishna consciousness is actually of the progression of faith. Initially, that faith, you know, is soft and pliable. You know, it can be, you know, influenced, you know, by others. But then, as one associates with those that are faithful, who have faith in the process of devotional service, then that faith becomes, you know, a little more firm. And then one also, that faith means practical faith then. And one takes up some activities of devotion. And then side by side, as one engages in bhakti, then one also gains knowledge. Krishna mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam that by engaging in devotional service, automatically renunciation and knowledge, it awakens. So this knowledge that we're talking about, this is the knowledge that is there in the soul. You know, the soul's nature is Sat Chit Ananda. It is full of knowledge, it is eternal and blissful. So the dormant knowledge that is there, inherent in the soul, that becomes awakened by practicing devotional service. And so one's faith then becomes firm, where the faith is strong enough that it cannot be shaken by others. But of course, their knowledge about scriptures and their realizations may not be, you know, very strong. But for their own self, they are very convinced about the process of devotional service, and they engage in that process. And then that faith further grows like that. So this faith is intrinsic to the soul. So here Prabhupada is spending a lot of time speaking about material benedictions. In Bhagavad Gita again, Krishna mentions that one, when one takes up devotional service, one becomes above Shubha and Ashubha, Labha and Alabha, auspicious, inauspiciousness. You know, what is favorable, what is unfavorable. You know, one becomes above it. Devotional service, bhakti, is on another platform. The first characteristics of bhakti is Shubhada, actually. It brings in all auspiciousness. But this auspiciousness is not, you know, the auspiciousness that we are talking about here, that Srila Prabhupada is expressing, material benedictions. Auspicious is not in terms of, you know, Janma, Aishwarya, or Shruta, or Shri. So typically, what one hankers for, either one wants good birth, Janma, one wants some opulence, Aishwarya, one wants beauty, one wants knowledge. So the auspiciousness that comes from devotional service, it is not in these categories. Of course, Krishna may choose to, you know, give these opulences to a devotee who can engage them appropriately. There's no problem with that. But these are not the, you know, these are typically, you know, benedictions. Without devotional service, they turn into, you know, a curse. You can even give some examples. For example, I mean, Hiranyakashipu is one here already. But then besides Hiranyakashipu, the sons of Kuvera, for example, let's say, Aishwarya or Shri, the sons of Kuvera. Kuvera is one of the demigods. He is the treasurer of the Supreme Lord, one can say. and he has sons. So his sons, because of that opulence, they became contaminated. So that material benediction, it turned into a curse. And we also see, you know, studies have shown that many people that, you know, win lotteries, so basically an avalanche of money somehow comes into their life. It is mentioned that almost 60-70% of them, their life goes on a downward spiral after that. In fact, they, you know, they actually file bankruptcy after some time. So they don't know with all the wealth that they have what to do, you know. Practically everything is available to them and they sort of just sort of self-destruct. Aishwarya. Shruta, there are again some examples in scripture, but one example that comes to mind is, you know, of course, by the mercy of the Lord, he was saved. There is one pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's one Pandit, Digvijay Pandit or Keshava Kashmiri. So he was very, very learned. You know. He was very learned and he was very proud of his capacity. So much so that he would go around, you know, the land and he would challenge anybody to a debate, you know, and then he would defeat them. And then he would ask them to sign his certificate. And in this way, he was, you know, on a world conquest. And he came to the island of Navadvip, you know, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, he was just a young man at the time, he resided in that. And he challenged Nimai Pandit, you know, to a debate. Anyway, so he recited, quoted, you know, shlokas, you know, like the wind on the Ganges. And Mahaprabhu, Nimai Pandit, he had great, I mean, he's the Supreme Lord. So he asked him that in your composition, what are some of the faults and, you know, embellishments in your composition? He said, embellishments I can find many, but faults? How can there be faults? There cannot be any faults. But anyway, so Nimai Pandit, he quoted back to him, which is in Shloka 56, these are, you know, the faults. There are some faults of repetition and so on and so forth. And then he asked, how could you remember, you know, the verse? I just composed them like the wind. And Nimai Pandit, in a very humble way, said, well, some people are gifted by the Supreme Lord to compose verses like the wind, and some people are gifted to remember them. And so I was able to remember them, and then, you know, I spoke back. Then anyways, please tell me, what are the faults? He said, there are no faults. Anyway, then Nimai Pandit, he pointed his faults, and this Digvijay Pandit, Keshav Kashmiri, he was devastated. You know, never was there a time where he was defeated by anyone. And so that night he went to, you know, his goddess Saraswati, one of the other demigods, who was in charge of learning. So, because Saraswati, she had promised him that she would be on his tongue. And so he said, you abandoned me, what happened? You promised me that you would be on my tongue, but then how come you abandoned me? And then she chastised him. You fool, you know, who you approach, Nimai Pandit, he is my worshipable Lord. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can I empower you to defeat him? It's just not possible. So she instructed him to go and take shelter of Nimai Pandit. And then he eventually did. The next day he went and took shelter of Nimai Pandit. And then Nimai Pandit, he engaged him. He said, Krishna has given you this gift, so please use it in Krishna's service. And you compose amazing, you know, poetry in glorification of the Lord. So this material benediction, like Prabhupada gives the examples, there are so many, you know, these material benedictions are like accumulating many, 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 many zeros. And if you don't put a one in front of it, they're just useless. In fact, they become, as Bhaktisiddhanta would call them, like a hangman's noose. So they become the burden, which, you know, causes one to glide down. That, as Prabhupada writes in the summary, they give, you know, rise to pride in the heart, and then pride gives rise to madness, and then one practically, you know, self-destructs. So Prabhupada's writings, his material benedictions are not really benedictions. So that's those are two examples. Other examples can also be given about birth, for example. Again, from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. As we know, Lord Brahma, I mean, he's of course a great personality, devotee of the Lord. So somehow or the other, it's a pastime. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is there. He abducted, the calves and the cowherd boys, in Vrindavan, and he, hid them in a cave. He wanted to see the extent of this young, cowherd boy Krishna. What are the extent of his mystic powers? He wanted to test. So he hid them in a cave. And of course, as we know, Krishna, he expanded himself into, carbon copies, you can say, of the calves and the cowherd boys. And Brahma was completely bewildered. He went to the cave and he saw the calves and the cowherd boys. He would come out, he saw, the calves and the cowherd boys. And then he realized his mistake, and then he begged for forgiveness. And he apologized for his great offense. And he went to a specific place and he performed austerities. And it is mentioned that when he was performing austerities, Lord Gauranga, he came. This is in a previous yuga, but Lord Gauranga, he came, he appeared. And he said that in the future, you will take part again in my pastimes. But then again, Lord Brahma said, because of my, high birth, Lord Brahma is born of Vishnu, but because of my position, I became proud. So let me, please give me such a birth that in my next lifetime, I will not be proud of my birth. So then Lord Brahma, eventually he became Haridas Thakur. He was born in a, nondescript family, just a very ordinary family. So anyway, so there are many examples that can be given how janma, a benediction, can turn into a curse. These extremely opulent personalities, where there is aristocracy and opulence in the lineage, typically many cases we have seen how the sons and the grandsons, their character is completely spoiled, like that. So Prabhupada, he writes, material benedictions are not always exactly worthy of being called benedictions. If one possesses more and more, a benediction itself may become a curse. For just as achieving material opulence, this material world requires great strength and endeavor, maintaining it also requires great endeavor. So here, to gain, as I was sharing earlier, to gain any opulence or any power, one requires to endeavor. And of course, Krishna has to sanction it. Krishna's mercy has to be there. One cannot, there are some people who feel that just by one's work, one can gain anything. That is not true. Yeah, there has to be, we have to deserve something. It has to be in our karmic account. Otherwise we can't. Otherwise, how do we explain, this person who is working 20 hours a day, every day, he has barely, he can barely put two meals together. But then, this person who barely works, he is a billionaire, millionaire. So it's not just one's work. There are other factors. Krishna sanction is there. The law of karma is there. So to gain anything, one, as Prabhupada is writing, one has to perform endeavor. One has to take up austerity. So to acquire something, it requires so much effort. And then once having acquired it, then one has to maintain it. Or there is always this fear of losing it. If one is not fearful of losing it, I guess one could say, I don't care about maintaining it. But typically, that's what happens. When you acquire so much with so much labor, you're attached to it. And you cannot just say, I don't care what happens to it. So then there is the fear of losing it. So then one has to maintain it. So Prabhupada says, so acquiring it is an issue, then maintaining it is an issue. So in this way, the life becomes, very, very complicated. So I also want to connect this purport, you know, for us devotees. There are three principles or three faults that really hamper our bhakti, right? From Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita, Atyahara, Prayasa, and Laulyam. You know, they are all connected here. So Prayasa, as Prabhupada is writing here, one has, Prayasa means endeavor. So if one wants to, Atyahara means over collecting things more than one requires. It could be anything. So I'll come to how it, as devotees we should be careful about these things. So Hiranyakashipu, for example, I mean, he should not be, you know, out of the scope of our self-evaluation. Yeah, he's a great demon, but we should, he's within the scope of our self-evaluation. So Atyahara, Prayasa, and Laulya, Srila Rupa Goswami, one of our teachers, he mentions that these are six principles that are unfavorable for cultivating devotional service. As we were mentioning earlier, somehow or the other, one receives the seed of bhakti, devotion. And devotion is a science, Prabhupada explains, it's a science. And to conduct any experiment, you know, there are to be, the parameters have to be appropriate. One cannot just perform the experiment in a whimsical manner and expect a desired outcome. So Rupa Goswami, our, you know, one of our acharyas, who teaches us how to perform devotion, he tells us what is favorable for a devotional service, what is unfavorable for a devotional service. So he writes that Atyahara, Prayasa, Prajalpa, Niyamagraha, Janasanga, and Laulyam, but in this context, Atyahara, Prayasa, and Laulyam. So in one sense, one can say it all begins with Laulyam, greed. And greed, what is greed? In simple terms, greed is, you know, one can say in Bhagavad Gita terms, also lust. Lust, not just, you know, sexual, usually it has a sexual connotation, but lust means Atmindriya Priti. I keep myself in the center, that is considered lust. And to keep Krishna or Vaishnavas at the center of one's activities, that is called love. A small difference. Who is at the center? So I am at the center, and so I have unlimited desires. Somehow or the other, I've been, you know, sojourning in this material world. Anadi karma phale. I have accumulated so many desires, you know, and no matter how many I fulfill, you know, there are more that show up. So there's this laulyam, and then to fulfill those desires, then one has to perform intense endeavor, prayasa. And then one, based on one's prayasa, one may gain something. So atyahara, and one collects things. So Rupa Goswami explains that this is very detrimental for us. So how is this applicable to us? It is applicable to us. So even in the realms of devotional service, Prabhupada explains that, you know, reading too many literatures, for example, which at this point, which is beyond our adhikar or our need to read, you know, so many literatures. And of course, we are not, you know, spiritual masters, if you will, but Prabhupada also explains to have many, many disciples, more than one can care for and maintain, to have so too many disciples, that is also can come in the category of atyahara. You know, so of course, as I said, we are not, you know, having disciples here, but in our own way, we all have our own small, you know, kingdom, so to speak. You know. And we all have our services. So when we in act of devotion, again, Srila Prabhupada writes that one should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means, according to one's, you know, adhikar. So means, for example, if somebody is a, you know, simple, you know, brahmana, you know, who doesn't have too many you know, things to offer to the Supreme Lord, then he should offer whatever he has, he should offer to the Supreme Lord and remain satisfied in that offering. But if somebody has, you know, unlimited opulence, then he should offer, you know, all that opulence to the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada writes that one should arrange one's devotional service according to one's, you know, capacity, according to one's means. So whatever, you know, devotional service is unlimited. And then, as I was sharing earlier, if we don't address, you know, these laulyam, the tendency for laulyam and atyahara and prayasa, if we don't address them, what typically happens is we bring them into the realms of devotional service. We might have given up doing them in the sphere of, you know, our job, if you will, but then, you know, they percolate into the realms of devotional service. So one has to be careful. Lord Brahma informed Hiranyakashipu that although he was ready to offer him whatever he had asked, the result of the benediction would be very difficult for Hiranyakashipu to maintain. Nonetheless, since Brahma had promised, he wanted to grant all the benedictions asked. The word Durlabhan indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. So this is beautiful. The last sentence, Prabhupada writes, one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. So again, staying within the context of devotees, you know, what is a benediction? For us, the benediction is to be engaged in devotional service, in the activities of devotional service. But then, those activities of devotional service are actually done for the pleasure of Krishna. So here, Prabhupada is writing, one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. So these activities of devotional service, they are not for our enjoyment. If we are trying to do them for our enjoyment, what will happen is there will be like a pinprick, there will be some dissatisfaction. You know, like Srimad Bhagavatam says, Savai Pumsha Paradharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhokshaje Ahetuki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. So if it is unmotivated, there are no ulterior motives behind that devotional activities, that has the potency to completely satisfy the soul. So in our devotional activities, if we are somehow finding some dissatisfaction, feeling some dissatisfaction, we have to see, you know, maybe some of these things are at play. Yeah. Where we are really not keeping Guru and Krishna at the center. So there are many, many things that I took from the retreat in Gita Nagari. But one of the last, there was a lecture, initiation lecture. And so the initiation lecture, as we understand from Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 principles favorable for devotional service. And the first three are connected to the spiritual master. Right? One should accept shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, Guru Padashraya, then one should accept initiation from him. And then the third one is one should render him service, you know, in a loving way. Preeti Purvakam Guru Sevaya. So we often hear Preeti Purvakam, Bhajatam Preeti Purvakam unto Krishna. And it is, our acharyas explain that if that devotional service is done in that, you know, way, to please Guru and Krishna, then one can, the strongest of anarthas one has, one can, you know, rise above them. The strongest of anarthas. So I'm really inspired. I pray to all of you that inspiration somehow, you know, remains to somehow or the other. And I was checking in, yes, you know, we're performing devotional activities, you know, we're moving our hands, I'm moving my hands and legs and so on and so forth. But I mean, it's a good time to check, you know, why am I doing this? Is the pleasure of the spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, is it at the center? Or is it another, you know, way, or, you know, another means to self-aggrandizement, you know, bhakti? Because bhakti, you know, as we see, before we came into devotional service, you know, I can speak for myself, I mean, I was just like an ordinary person, you know, mean, who really knew us? Not many people. But now, you know, just even in this congregation, there are so many people that know us, and people know us even outside of, you know, Chicago and so on and so forth. You know, so there is, so somehow Krishna, he brings, you know, he gives us, you know, these opulences. And if we somehow we, you know, we enjoy those opulences, then we are in trouble. Then, you know, our taste for devotional service, it goes down, and then we're wondering what happened, you know. Why am I not feeling ecstasy? So somehow or the other, to carefully guard against this enjoying tendency. So this benediction, I mean, this is the ultimate benediction we have received. You know, the spiritual life, the benediction to practice Krishna consciousness in the Sangha of devotees. And to really, you know, value it and not sort of bring our, you know, other things and adulterate it, but, you know, somehow practice it as purely as we can, so we can guard against, you know, these things. So those are some of the things I wanted to share, and we'll pause here and see if there's any discussion, comments or questions. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
So this very segue is perfectly
okay.
How he's maintained you know, his Christian passions and also his building. But one lesson I would like to mention that I learned from him, that's one of the most valuable lessons I've ever learned, is that he'll be doing, let's say, you know, 6 hours of maintenance a day or four to six hours a day. Then over the years, over 3 years, he would, you know, not us sitting in this room and he'll tell me, can't make it to Mangarati. So he'll say, you know, I hope they don't kick me out because I can't make it to all the programs. I'm like, he's been here for 40 years, called by disciples. So I'm thinking, you know, why would, so this is the most important lesson, maybe we can speak about it. The lesson I got from that is that regardless of our position, of how high or how low, we should never consider ourselves irreplaceable. And you mentioned the story of Lord Rama, how he, you know, Krishna expanded himself. So Krishna is simply spent himself, he doesn't need us. So how important is it to realize actually that we're not irreplaceable? How important is that to maintain our Krishna consciousness in that sense?
Two things. Prabhupada many times he mentioned that actually Krishna, he doesn't need, in the context of prasadam, offering to the Supreme Lord, he said many times, that Krishna, he doesn't need, you know, our offering. He is being served by millions of, you know, goddesses of fortune, so he's not hungry, you know, for our offering. But he said that that offering is for us. You know. And what Krishna is actually asking, even in that verse when Bhagavad Gita is mentioned, that he wants to taste the devotion of that, you know, devotee who is offering him. That's what is, you know, it's an exchange, that's the exchange. So this devotional service is for us, yeah. Coming back to, you know, the point that you mentioned about Jisindri Prabhu. Yes, but then as you were speaking, I was also thinking that in a way the building is maintaining his devotional service. You follow? Yes, he's maintaining the temple of Kishore Kishori, but that's not just, it's not just a building, it's his devotional service. You know? And I've talked to many devotees. Yes, you know, there are austerities, you know, with every service. And then many times we, you know, seem to be complaining about those austerities. But you ask them, okay, thank you very much. You know, we don't have to do it. Really? No, I think I'll stick to this one. So this is like tapo divyam. This is divine austerity, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's a great opulence. It's a great benediction to actually have the opportunity to perform some service. That should be our attitude. Yeah, and then whatever little austerity is one may face in the, you know, path of devotional service, I mean, they are, what is it? I mean, if we are going to gain Krishna, I mean, what, you know, can you put value on Krishna? Can you put value on Krishna? We can't. It's invaluable. So, yeah, so that's why we have to have, you know, sambandha gyan, you know, very, you know, in place, so we can, you know, perform our abhideya, our practices, you know, with a simple and a grateful heart. Yeah. Of course, from time to time, devotees may, you know, change their services. That's, you know, with, you know, without skipping all the details, in consultation, you know, with their, you know, with the devotees that are there in their life, one may change, you know, their service. But then, my God, you know, devotional service is what we want. You know, we cannot live without devotional service. So we just have to be careful before we, you know, let something go. Make sure that we have something else already, you know, that we will, you know, practice, you know, with same or even more intensity, you know, another anga of devotional service, like that. So there are phases in a devotee's life, you know, like things change, but devotional service, you know, continues. It just it might take another shape, another form, another place, like that. Then you asked about we being irreplaceable, not being irreplaceable. That's what you asked, right?
Yeah.
That. That's easy, in a way. I mean, for example, I was gone to Gita Nagari for, you know, 2 or 3 days. I typically do some service, you know, here at the temple every day, worshipping the deity. But, you know, the service went on. Of course, somebody else, you know, maybe, you know, filled in for me. They did some extra service that they would not have done otherwise. But again, our whole idea of extra service also is sort of, in a way, is it really extra service? Meaning, if I'm not engaged in that service at the time, hopefully I'm engaged in some other service. You follow? You follow what I'm saying? No? Okay. Well, I'm saying it's not, we say, well, I did some extra service today. I mean, how can it be extra service? Because the scriptures enjoin, you know, nityam bhagavata sevaya. I mean, can you do more than 24 hours of service? You can't. You can. So, yeah, when we say extra service, it may mean, okay, this is my designated service, and there was some other service that I had, which I could do in that 2 hours, but I chose to not do that service, and I'm doing this service instead. So it's not extra service; it's just like that. You know, for example, like, yes. I mean, I went to Gita Nagari, so the service was to hear. That was the service. You know. And of course, I'm feel for those devotees that were not able to go, but then again, the thing is, if you are thinking the devotional service is like there, not here, it's a problem. Wherever we are, we have the opportunity. to practice devotional service. I could be in Maya, in Githanagari, you know, going like 800 miles there and, you know, all, and then come back and like, wow, what happened? And then here, devotees could be peacefully, you know, performing their, you know, in activities. I was talking to Luke before I went. they could be, you know, as happy as anyone else. So the opportunity to engage in devotional service is there. At any, every moment it is there. If we are not seeing it, it's because of our lack of Krishna consciousness. We are not seeing things in connection with Krishna. Yeah. So, that's the way I feel. It's, yeah, it is extra service. You know what, extra service, that is debatable. Okay, anything else? Anyone? No. Okay, so we'll pause here. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Ha ha ha.